The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we're going to get caught up on some email questions from our podcast listeners. We are also live this afternoon. This afternoon is July 2nd, 2018. It's about 2:40 p.m. Mountain Time. I think we've told people in the past what time we go live on Monday afternoons, but it tends to vary. So I think the best advice would be to register an account at our podcast streaming service that we use called MixLR, M-I-X-L-R, is the website. You can get to that through a link on our website here at jimhelps.com. You'll see Listen Now information, and from there you can stream directly, or you can even register for an account. When you have a registered account and you follow us as one of your favorites, whenever we go live, it will actually give you a quick little alert, and I believe they even have an app that goes on your smartphone, so if you're out and about, you'll get notified. So if you're an avid Retirement and IRA Show listener and never want to miss an opportunity to call in live, that's probably the best way to be advised. Now, we weren't that concerned with going on at a strange time today because we have plenty of emails to get caught up on, so that'll easily fill up a show. But if we ever get caught up on those emails, we'll be a little bit more dependent upon live callers calling in, and that's where our... And the show works a lot better with the mic on.
Yes,
well.
I got that.
There we
now.
Go. There okay. we go.
Could they
Welcome,
hear at
Jim.
All anything?
They heard me.
They heard you, but they couldn't hear me?
You would have been a distant, faint murmur.
As many people probably wish I was. Where was I going with this?
I don't know.
Neither do I.
You hadn't really started anything yet, so.
No, but I had a very good point I wanted to make.
About registering for an account to be notified or
no,
to call in live.
No, hell, even I don't know how to do
send
that.
Send an email.
Or the other thing we can do for our people who want, because I like people calling in. We had a few call in, and then we kind of dropped the ball on it because we broadcast live at various times. Perhaps you and I could improve and really try to broadcast live at the same time every week.
It would be a little easier if we make the other change that you mentioned.
There are changes coming to the Retirement and IRA Show. Good changes, I think. I don't want to announce them now, but right. I think by August is a safe bet that some of the changes can begin.
Yeah, I think it'll be easier. It'll be easier to coordinate things.
At that point, I think it'll be a lot easier, which is what we're trying to do. And my wish of an expanded show will be coming true sooner rather than later, much to Chris's chagrin. But my brilliancy, I did it without increasing your workload.
Now, with that celebratory
expression
there, in the past, there's been comments about not increasing the workload because of certain changes, which
ended up increasing
didn't
the workload.
Really come true. So,
but I walk you through judgment. What I'm trying to do, and you
it
agree.
It all sounds good on paper.
On paper, it does not look like it will increase your workload. And the whole point, folks, is we're going to finally have the two versions, I hope, by August. The two versions of the Retirement and IRA Show that I want.
Spanish and English?
No, but maybe we should have them interpreted. But we're going to have the current version, which has kind of evolved, Chris, into a Q&A.
Pretty much, because we're always behind in answering emails.
Oh, absolutely. And when we were live and actually got live callers, it was a live Q&A because listeners, instead of sending an email that sometimes went into email purgatory and we never got around to answering them, or yours truly lost them, or we did answer them, but maybe I didn't answer it quite the way you thought, or I didn't interpret your email quite the way you meant. We'll see an example of that today, Chris, where I'm still confused on the email, and I reached out to the gentleman for more clarity, and his answer gave me more confusion. As you'll see, by broadcasting live, we had hoped people could call in and then I could get a lot of these uncertainties answered right away because you're having on a more meaningful conversation. So my goal was to expand the podcast, make the one that comes out, I can't really say on Saturdays, Chris, because sometimes they're on Saturday, sometimes Sunday, sometimes Monday, but sometime between
about once a week.
Once a week between Saturday and Monday is when we're supposed to be releasing each show. I say supposed to because we have to go through a whole compliance rigmarole, and sometimes that gets bogged down in bureaucracy or ineptitude on our behalf or compliance's behalf. I'll throw them under the bus and us under the bus on that. And sometimes they don't quite play when they're supposed to. Our hope is to clean that up, but also come out with a second version of the Retirement and IRA Show that would probably come out either on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, somewhere in that time period. So if the current one comes out on a Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday is the second one. The second one will be more succinct. The show will probably be around 40 to
30 minutes.
No, I can't do 30 minutes. You know that.
That should aim for 30, and then it'll end up being 45 or 50.
Okay. We're going to aim for 30, but the reality is it'll be 45 to 60. And
I said 50.
I know you said 50, but I said 60. The second show is what I'm going to term the Retirement and IRA Show EDU. And what does EDU stand for as someone who works in the EDU industry?
Elephant doing unwarranted things.
Nope. Try again.
Edu? Edu?
It's not EDU. Emu. It's not an elephant doing unnatural things. And that would be EDUT.
Education?
There you go. EDU stands for education. On that show, we are not going to answer an email question, but we're going to delve down into specific topics a lot deeper. It's going to go back to the way the Retirement and IRA Show was until it grew so much in popularity and we started getting a ton of questions. And I love it. I love getting questions. So please don't stop sending questions. Just be very patient when they get answered until we can get the actual live recording nailed and we start recording the same time, the same week on track. But the EDU show is going to be one where I'm going and Chris and Justin, when he's here, will be able to delve far more deeply, Chris, into one topic and teach a lot about that one topic.
Very nice. That'll probably generate extra questions, too, because it was when we used to do those shows when we didn't have a lot of questions to answer.
Questions? You sounded like Donald Duck.
Well, I was trying to hide a jelly belly in
my
cheek.
I know. I was trying to joke with it. He is trying to eat and talk at the same time. It's quite humorous.
It pretty much works. For those people who know me, very few things slow down my ability to eat. So,
now, when you're teaching, Do you eat in front of the kids when you're up there?
No. Early in the semester, though, it's usually I have to rely on Ricolas to make it through.
Because the throat can't handle it.
Your throat actually gets in shape. After a while, you know, you can then talk for 4 hours a day without any problem. But the first few weeks, 2-3 weeks of class every semester, kind of rough. So I don't technically eat. I don't need a sandwich while I'm trying to talk to them. Although many students do. Mocking me.
You don't order pizza and have it delivered?
No.
Well, Jeff Spicoli?
Yeah, that'd be nice. So, no. But what was I trying to say? Oh, those special shows?
Yes.
Yes, we would. When we dig into those, it would cause people to go, oh, wait a minute. I thought I understood that, but they just mentioned something that I think applies to me. And then they'd reach out for,
right.
That's really what generated most of the initial questions.
And then it's just grown, and I really think we can support two versions of the show now. One will be a Q&A, Retirement and IRA Show Q&A, and the other will be Retirement and IRA Show EDU. And we'll tell you at the beginning of the show which one it is. We'll probably come up with a new little introduction. I have an idea of the introduction for the EDU show. I thought it was kind of cute. I don't know if you'll like it. You probably won't because it's my idea. But
I don't dislike all your ideas.
Most of them.
I have questions about some of them.
Top of the hour comedy break was not one of my ideas you supported.
It was not. Not many people did.
We
don't. You did. Your mother did. That was about it.
We don't know that for sure. Number one fan is my mom. But anyways... Back to
this show, which is a Q&A show.
Back to the task at hand.
This How about is a Q?
We have a Q. I'm going to try to get through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 today. How many do you think we're going to get through?
If we do the 10 words or less approach, it might work.
Other than that, you're saying I'm not going to be able to do this?
I don't think you can do 5.
I
think we can do 4.
Well, how long can we stay recording?
Till 4 is over.
So a few more minutes.
We can go for a while.
Okay.
We've got not like anyone wants to listen for 2 hours.
No.
We could go 2 hours, but we're not going.
Anyways, this is a first question to kick it off. Is a listener from the fine state of Ohio.
Very nice.
Not far from?
Kentucky.
Thank you. A place where I was contemplating, notice it's past tense now, contemplating moving to for retirement purposes. But I did find out today they have an inheritance tax. Not that it's going to affect me. I'm dead. But they have an inheritance tax in Kentucky.
And you're worried about those to whom you'd leave your inheritance? I'm not going to live in Kentucky, so it won't affect me, will
it? Who said I'm going to give it to you? I could move to Kentucky and make friends and want to leave it to them.
That sounds hurtful.
No, Kentucky is still on the list of potential places for me to relocate to, but I have yet, including my number one fan, have yet to find someone who supported that idea. I told my number one fan over the weekend because it was her birthday, and I called her to wish her happy birthday.
I just recommended caution. Maybe visit the fine state of Kentucky before committing to ending your life there.
You can garden
You've in. Never been there.
Never been there.
And somehow you just
picked it. But it rained there this weekend.
Rained here this weekend.
Didn't rain at my house.
Rained.
Apparently it rained here in Fort Collins, Justin
said.
Yeah, I didn't get any rain. My poor garden needs water.
That's why you have that spigot you open up and there's water coming out.
Yeah, I know, but it's a tough state to garden in Colorado. So freaking hot and dry. It's not just...
We are a high desert state.
Yeah, I realize that.
So. We just make it fake looking green by watering it.
High Plains Desert. Okay, first question is from someone in Ohio who doesn't have these issues with hot, dry state.
No, he gets moist and warm.
Moist and warm. It begins, hello, I appreciate the information that you provide on your website. Well, thank you. And this did come from jimhelps.com. It came from that little box we have on there, contact us. So if no one has been to our website, it is jimhelps.com. jimhelps.com. A plethora, as we say, cornucopia of information on jimhelps.com.
A big bag of stuff.
Big bag of stuff. I'm trying to get him to talk, folks. That's why he's you're stuffing your
I'm gonna
face.
I'm going to be out of these. Well,
you know those jelly beans are for clients, right?
Not these. These are out of the big bucket, not the individual wrapped packages.
Well, the big bucket ones just haven't been wrapped yet.
you pay someone to wrap little portions of Jelly Bellies.
The Jelly Bellies don't come wrapped.
That one container had a bunch of wrapped.
Tina makes them ahead of time. We buy the little bags from Uline and fill the bags, and she puts a little tie on them.
Okay, then I'm clearly eating the Jelly Bellies meant for clients.
What, do you think I just stocked the office with Jelly Bellies?
You used to supply me with old Halloween candy.
I did, until you ate it all.
And then it stopped. There hasn't been holiday candy for the past 2 years.
I have been known to stick my hand in the Jelly Belly pool
as
well.
And I heard you rummaging around in there before you came in. That's what reminded me to go get some.
Okay. So it begins. I have a question about the Social Security maximum family benefit.
Mm.
And I'll let you explain what all this is, Chris. I'll just read the question.
It's complexity.
It is complexity. I have two dependents, my wife and a son. Mm-hmm. My son has been disabled since birth. Did you get that part when you were looking through this?
No, but that doesn't really affect this.
Oh. It would if he passed away, though, wouldn't it?
There wouldn't be a family maximum issue.
But the disabled person, because they were disabled before the age of 21...
That changes some other rules.
Correct.
If we're talking about the family maximum issue...
Okay, I'll stick on
separate,
that one.
Yeah.
Okay, I won't go down that rabbit hole. My wife does not have enough work credits on her own account for Social Security. So my understanding is that the maximum family benefit will reach its full potential at my full retirement age, which is age 66. So when I reach that age, I plan to continue working full time, possibly for a few more years. But I also plan to file for benefits at age 66, so my wife, who will be 65, and my disabled son can start collecting.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be able to collect as well, but I'll let you talk about that. He's not going to be subject to the earnings test. He's past his full retirement age.
Correct. But he's going to turn on a lot of streams. Well, three.
Oh, absolutely. Three streams.
Three streams instead of just one when he reaches 66.
Correct.
Because it'll unlock the door to his wife and son to claim as well.
Let me get to the last paragraph. Mm-hmm. Thus, if I work for two more years... With him covered on my work insurance, him being his son, and I believe he's talking about health insurance,
mm-hmm.
he will then transition from my work insurance to Medicare. Guess he's trying to work a little longer to bridge that gap for his son, I'm assuming, or he just wants some more income. However, my question is about the family maximum benefit. I thought that my Social Security will continue to be recalculated as long as I work. So my payments will increase. But the maximum family benefit is capped at my full retirement age. Does that mean if my Social Security amount increases, my wife's and son's will decrease? I wouldn't think so, but I haven't been able to find a satisfactory explanation.
Hmm.
Can you point me to any Social Security Administration documentation where this part will be explained? Thank you in advance. Now, he signed it, his real name, and I don't mind that because if we ever have to reach out to someone, that is nice to have a real name. But as always, we are going to call him George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
So we need a little clarification on this, or I need to clarify a few things that he stated. He made the comment several times that the family maximum is set or is reached at his full retirement age. He's actually getting things a little confused there. It's the family maximum is based on a person's PIA, the primary insurance amount. The primary insurance amount is the retirement benefit someone is due at their full retirement age. So that's where full retirement age is entering his mind.
Mm-hmm.
But your PIA is established at 62. So when he reaches 62, they calculate his PIA at that point. And unless there's something that causes it to change through additional work history, it's set at that. So he hasn't yet reached full retirement age, but his PIA is set. And that's what is used to determine the family maximum. Now, the family maximum is a very convoluted calculation Really, I've attempted in the past a couple of times over the years to try to describe it verbally over the radio, and it doesn't work very well. So I'm not going to detail it. But just know that under one number holder's record, that's what the system sees you as, something called a number holder. You hold a social security number under which you are recording work history so that you can earn benefits. So under one number holder's record, there's a maximum that can be paid out to that person plus any auxiliary benefits, which are things like spousal benefits or child benefits. And that limit is between 150 and 188% of your PIA. Now, the range there depends specifically on how big the PIA is. There's kind of a tiered calculation system that I'm not going to go into, again, because it's confusing to describe over the airwaves. But that's what he's talking about, the family maximum. Anyone with only two people claiming on one number holder's record won't ever be affected by the family maximum. But once you get to three or more, they are affected. And I usually simplify describing the family maximum amount as saying it's usually about 150% of your PIA. Essentially, since a spouse receives up to half of a person's PIA, if you were claiming at your full retirement age and your spouse was claiming their half, you'd be at 150%, no limitation. But as soon as a second auxiliary benefit was turned on, in this case, the disabled child, they would have to share. They don't get another half for that person. The 150% roughly maximum is going to kick in. Now, maybe they're lucky and their limit is closer to 188, but it's not going to go to, say, 200%, which is what it would imply. And if you had five kids that all were of the age and status to claim, they're not all going to get half.
And can I interrupt? I confess I wasn't paying attention. I was reading. Client was sending me an email. I just wanted to make sure everything was set. Did you go over, or am I mistaken? His retirement benefit is not calculated in that family maximum calculation. In other words,
it is?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if his benefit was to rise?
Oh, we're getting to that.
Okay.
Hadn't quite gotten there.
You haven't gotten
there. Doing the basic explanation of how the family maximum works.
Gotcha.
So now his question, what he's talking about is claiming at 66 where his retirement benefit just so happens to be at his PIA. He hasn't yet earned delayed retirement credits by delaying, etc. But he says he's going to work for two more years and thinks that that's going to increase his benefit. There's two ways that your benefit goes up. One way is when your PIA increases. Your PIA increases due to work history. Your benefit, although it's calculated from the PIA, can be a very different amount. Proof is, if you claim at 62, you don't get your PIA. You get a different benefit amount. On the flip side, if you claim after your full retirement age, you get more than your PIA amount. Those adjustments don't play into the family maximum issue. So he's not talking about earning delayed retirement credits, but a reason I wanted to mention that is I'm sure other people are thinking the same thing, that, you know, if I delay and delay and delay, I'm not going to get any more for my family because I'm going to be bumping up against this family maximum. Delayed retirement credits don't go into the family maximum benefit. All that goes into it is the PIA itself. Now, for him, he's thinking of working longer. Working longer doesn't increase your benefit for some weird reason. It increases your benefit because it's increasing your PIA. And that's only if you are working longer and those years have high enough earnings to replace a previously lower earnings year in your 35 highest earnings years.
And that's very possible, though.
Which is possible, absolutely. So if he's still working full-time.
Absolutely.
A lot of people at that age just start to work part-time, and the earnings aren't high enough to do the replacement. But he's going to have that going for him. And because it increases his PIA, it's not only going to increase his benefit, but also his wife and son's benefit. And it's going to, because of all that, the PIA going up, the 150% amount goes up as well.
That's what I was
wondering.
So him
working more isn't going to lower their benefit.
It could only raise it.
He was thinking he's been told or read that full retirement age benefit is what the family maximum is calculated off of. What he's forgetting is that if he works longer and his amount, his benefit goes up, it's because the PIA is going up.
And the family maximum is based on the PIA.
It's based totally on the PIA.
So as the PIA goes up, mm-hmm. so does the maximum.
Right. So he's not going to have to worry about that. And I do. He asked for proof, and I do have links to the Social Security, two documents, one where there's a multi-page document dedicated to explaining the family maximum because it is so confusing, and then a very short little POMS entry that directly addresses...
And POMS being what?
The Program Operations Manual. Right, which is the rules, the Bible, if you will, of how Social Security is applied. At least the rules are applied.
And you wrote the POMS for them, didn't you?
I'm not even going to claim having done so because it's...
You found errors in it, and I'm still waiting.
I haven't found errors in the POMS.
Oh, you didn't find it in the POMS?
I found errors in other publications that they've put out.
Okay.
They do kind of, they have to, because the numbers change every year, Social Security has to reprint certain brochures every year. And
for those who don't know, the internet exists?
Well, they put them on the internet as PDFs. That's where I find them and discover that sometimes they're not correct. And so, yes, on two occasions I've run into one of these updated items that they updated incorrectly.
You know Social Security is the government, right? And the government doesn't like to be told by the people that they're wrong?
I notify them through a third party. So I'm hoping that that person is is keeping my identity.
They're the ones who are going to disappear?
Anonymous, yeah. Yeah, so that person is possibly going
to
disappear.
I'm still waiting for a dark SUV to roll up someday when you're walking out of the office and... All we hear is a muffled rumble, and the SUV flies off, and no one sees you again.
It's possible. It's worth it, though. I need to get the word out.
Okay, well,
so,
very
kind
good.
Of a long
Are you going to reach out to this gentleman?
I will reach out to him because I need to supply him with those.
Do you need his email? Not
proof.
That I'm going to give it to you right
I
now.
I have a copy of that.
You have a copy of this?
Yes.
Okay, so email him, and I'm going to put a notation on this for Laura to reach out to him. Mm-hmm. What day is this playing? This is this weekend. Today's what,
7th
the 2nd?
Or so. It'll be the 7th is Saturday when this should release.
So we'll put the 7th, but Lord only knows if it'll actually play on that day.
The 7th or shortly thereafter.
Okay.
So just as a reminder for some people, I might have said something that's like, wait a minute, what did he say? A lot of people don't realize if you continue working past the age of 62, you can increase that PIA amount, which not only will help you, it will help anyone claiming under you, like spousal benefits or child and care benefits. Those
but
types
after
of
the age of 62, if you're working and filed, you can lose your benefits because of the earnings test.
Earnings test,
and then
correct.
Everyone under you loses a proportional amount as well.
Due to the earnings test, right? That's
correct.
Not, yeah, that's an offset from the earnings test, not so much a reduction.
But
of their
once you hit
directly.
Your full retirement age, mm-hmm. you can work and earn as much as you want and not lose anything. And correct. That would be fine for him because he's going to be his full retirement age, he said, correct?
Correct. So he's the extra 2 years of work can do nothing but increase
yeah.
all three
can
of their benefits.
Can do nothing but good.
Cannot reduce it.
Right.
Even if he has bad earnings years.
And on the earnings test, if the wife worked, her benefits would be reduced, but the child's and his would not.
Right.
Because the wife is not at her full retirement age.
Right, but it can only affect her spousal benefit. It can't flow up and affect
correct.
His or other auxiliary
correct.
Benefit.
Yep, that's what I said. Yep.
Yep.
Okay. All right, well, listeners, there was the only Social Security question today was that one. So, now
so that's the only time I get to talk?
No. Was that a dig?
I was just asking.
I look at you all the time and point.
I know, but when I'm talking, you read your emails and stuff. You don't even listen to what I'm saying.
I paid attention.
You admitted it.
I did. Well, I didn't know if you had talked about this yet. And I can't do two things at once.
Clearly. That's why I'm asking you to focus on me when I'm talking.
So when you're talking, I'm reading.
I get it.
Fine. But I can't listen to you and read at the same time.
I know.
I put the iPad down now. I'm not looking
it's
at
it. It's because you're getting ready to talk.
True. Okay, next question. All right. Which one do we want to do next?
Happy Independence Day for those of you celebrating such a thing this week.
We'll answer this one. This one is a good example. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it's this one.
You've had all this time of ignoring me while I'm talking to not be able to figure out what you want to talk about.
Oh,
next.
This is another Social Security one. I lied. Oh. We'll do this one, and then we'll get into mine.
Okay. I hope I know it.
Yeah, I didn't show you this one. Okay. Hi, Jim and Chris. Love the show. I like that beginning.
It's just right to the point.
It's a fine beginning. Mm-hmm. My wife and
I noticed you still haven't gotten to the one that talks about liking my part of the show.
We can get to that. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. I know you found that email. Mm-hmm. I should have burned it. Oh, I know we know where he's from. He's from the fine state of Minnesota.
Well, we have a lot of listeners from Minnesota.
We had that one guy from Duluth.
I think we answered all of his questions, and he's happily retired in Duluth now.
Yeah, we never hear from him anymore.
I don't know.
Hi, Jim and Chris. Love the show. My wife and I have what I call the last of the good public pensions. Here in the state of Minnesota, we have the rule of 90 with no reduction for early retirement. That is a pretty good one. We will retire in 5 years at age 58 for me and 56 for my wife. Yeah, see, government pensions devoid of economic reality. With a combined pension of $84,000. Mm-hmm. With an annual cost of living adjustment that will vary between 1 and 1.5%.
Hmm. Especially retiring in the 50s, that's something that's slowly
reduce the value. Yep. So, cost of living adjustment, folks, is how much they're going to increase the pension every year. Because, of course, a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow. So if he turns on his pension income, which is very generous at $84,000 combined, and he goes on to say this is 100% joint and survivor. So that's $84,000 joint and survivor. So this does throw in a huge... widower tax penalty. I'm just jogging
plus
the note here.
Plus 40 years of possible underinflating adjustment. Yep. That's a weird way of saying it, but not keeping pace with inflation.
Let's get to his Social Security question first before we start ripping apart everything else. Okay. Now, where did I leave off?
He's in the fine state of Minnesota, going to collect a nice government pension.
Well, it's because it's all small. It prints out very tiny. It's hard for me to read with these old eyes. Okay.
Time for bifocals for Jim.
I know. Oh, God. With a cost of living increase of between 1 and 1.5%, this will be both taking 100% joint and survivor. That's where I left off. Mm-hmm. My Social Security statement says, if I continue working at my present salary, so I'm guessing... this pension is in addition to Social Security, so he must have been paying into Social Security.
This whole time, yeah.
So this is very good. Mm-hmm. Okay. My Social Security statement says if I continue working at my present salary, I would get around $1,700 at age 62 or $2,500 at age 67, my full retirement age. My wife would get about $1,500 if she works until 62. My question is, how much of a hit will we take by stopping work early? Remember, Social Security assumes they're going to work to 62.
So when you get those quick education on how those projections are
and just
created, this is off of his Social Security statement. Go ahead.
You don't know his question. What you're answering is exactly his question. So keep answering because that's his question.
Oh, excellent. So when you get that estimate, the younger you are, the more it's likely off. And the reason is they're going to assume that you are going to continue earning at the average of your last 2 years of earnings up until age 62, which is when they actually set your PIA, which determines your full retirement age benefit. So if you're under the age of 62... they're going to, let's say, this guy's person's making, I don't know, $60,000 a year, $70,000 a year. It's got to be pretty good for him to be at $2,500 at age 67. That's his full retirement age benefit. So they're, and he's in his 50s currently.
He's 53.
So they're going to assume that he's from 53 to 62 going to continue to have entries into his work record at his current earnings rate, which is the average of the last 2 years, is what they do. And you can find this if you look at the fine print, the footnote on the statement. It divulges how the assumptions that they're making.
The one that says we may not have the money to pay you?
The same one. Same one. Last one of those I looked at in print and held it in my hand, it had in the footnotes, had it in the fine print, that we assume, this is based on us assuming you make the same on average you made it the last 2 years or something like that. So that's what they're using. So if he shuts off early, if he the benefit may not be severely impacted if he has 35 strong earnings years already. That's because they take your 35 best earnings years. Now, if without the next 9 years or so, 8-9 years of earnings in there, if those are zeros instead
only
of what
be
their
4 years.
How old is he? I thought you said he was 53.
Right, but he's going to work 5 more years. He's going to retire at 58.
Okay, at 58, he's got 4 years left.
Correct,
so he's not that far. He's got 4 zeros going to hit his earnings record.
Maybe if he doesn't have 35.
That are going, they're going to be in his work record. Whether they get picked up in the top 35 or not is going to be determined by what his other earnings are. So they're going to be recorded as zeros when they assumed they were going to be recorded at $75,000 a year, whatever his current rate is. That may change. But the closer you are to 62, the less likely it is that's going to change anything. So those people who are looking at their Social Security statement in their 40s, that estimate is probably way off, that you haven't even reached your peak earnings years. They're assuming that you're going to continue earning at the same rate you're earning in your at age 42, for instance, that you're never going to get a raise, that sort of thing. So most likely, and people think, oh, it's over-exaggerating, actually the opposite is true. For young people, they're generally underestimating what your true benefit is going to be. But the closer you get to 62, the more accurate that statement becomes. And when you're 62, it's perfectly accurate because at that point they have all the data.
That was my point when I read this. I thought he's only going to have 4 years. So in a worst-case scenario, I don't think it's going to be that far off.
No, it's going to be if he's 58, if he's been working since
he was 53, he's going to retire in 5 years.
But if he's 58, he's working since he was 20, that's... you know, 38 years worth, and he's going to have some low earnings years, probably from his early 20s in there. These zeros are going to be part of that. And, you know, it's possible it will ding it a little bit, but I don't think it'll be a whole lot unless he had, I don't know, a lot of years of pretty low earnings and these zeros get sucked in there. They're not part of the, you know, if they accidentally, if one of these is one of the best 35, if he didn't start working until his late 20s,
I don't
or
think it's going to be meaningful, but the difference. But let me continue. Well, actually, before I continue reading,
and by the
email,
way, instead of taking that, you can actually use some simple math, a document, actually the document that I mentioned before that I found errors in a couple of times. That document explains how your benefit is calculated. You can use that methodology, and instead of plugging in an assumption for earnings, you can plug in your actual earnings. If you don't want to do it by hand, which is kind of fun and kind of painful all at the same time, you could plug it into any number of calculators.
That's what I was going to recommend to him. We'll get to that in a second because he does ask that.
Yeah.
What the hell was my question? See, I had a question for you.
Well, you were about to read more of what he
said. Yeah, I was going to read more of his, but I was going to jump to the front of the line with mine. My question was, I forgot what I was going to ask you. It had to do with the topic you were talking about.
Earnings record and the Social Security statement.
Yeah, but I can't remember now what I was going to ask. It was a brilliant question.
Oh,
I would expect nothing less from me. I'm sure it'll pop back into
probably
my head.
Probably will.
Okay, so I'll proceed with his email since apparently dementia is running in my head right now. He continues, will I get more Social Security, by waiting 2 extra years to collect, or would I be better off collecting at 62 since I will have stopped working at 58?
Well, no matter what his benefit is, he's taking a reduction by claiming at 62. So it's not like the reduction...
Well, he was going to claim at 64, remember that.
Right, but it's not like he's going to avoid he's going to create a less of a penalty for himself by claiming early, saying, well, since my benefit is reduced anyway, it's not going to hurt that I claimed at 62. That's not true. You're going to get the same amount of pain, the same amount of percentage reduction at 62. The only question is, what's your PIA? What is that number that is your primary insurance amount that sets the benefit for him right now? His PIA, $2,500 is the prediction. If his PIA turns out to be $2,300, which, by the way, if you play around with your earnings history in the calculators, you actually have to change your earnings history substantially to make noticeable differences in your PIA once you have all your, you know, most of your years in there. So I doubt, even if he throws in a couple zeros there, that his PIA is going to drop more than a couple hundred dollars. It's not as if that reduction isn't reflected in his age 62 early retirement percentage decrease, if you will. If he's lower on the PIA, his 62 is going to be lower than it was before as well. So the question of claiming at 62 has nothing to do with, am I going to be dinged for not working for a couple years or not? The question is 62 the right age to claim your benefit? And that plays into kind of a more broad retirement planning question. If you need it, if what are your other sources, those sorts of
exactly.
things. The nice thing is he's got a lot of secure income in the form of the pension. However, the cost of living increase on his pension is capped, where currently, under current rules, the cost of living increase for Social Security is not. So Social Security might represent a little more reliable source of income that will keep up better with expenses moving forward than his actual pension. So there might be every reason to try to make a larger Social Security benefit by delaying past 62 than claiming it early. Does he express why he was planning to claim at 64, or was that just a number he just somehow had decided that was a good number
I'll
for him?
I'll continue reading.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. Where the hell could I leave off again?
There's so many small words.
Well, I wish people would do paragraphs. I don't think in our...
I think that's more
the website. A website doesn't... Yeah, it just sends it to me as one big thing. Will I get more by waiting to... Okay, we already asked that. My hope would be that our combined Social Security will provide us with another $36,000 a year, leaving us in total with about $120,000 a year between the pension from Minnesota mm-hmm. and their Social Security. Our other major asset is my 457 plan invested entirely. I don't want to name the fund. You know how compliance has a mm-hmm. conniption fit. Our only other major asset is my 457 invested entirely in beep with a current value of $155,000. Now, he does go on to say his wife has a 403B with a current value of $190,000 invested in, beep, and a stable value fund as well. I can say stable value because I'm not saying the name of the fund. Okay, our minimum dignity floor is well protected. We have a small mortgage and no other debt. We want to enjoy the go-go years of retirement. I just can't find a calculator to determine my Social Security, and that will allow me to change his inputs. Thank you for reading this email. And then he signed it with his mm-hmm. name, but he put in parentheses, George. Very good. Mm-hmm.
Now, Social Security offers a calculator that will allow you to customize it for your specifics where it overrides all of their default assumptions. It's not the most user-friendly thing. It's not horrible, but it's not...
couple of iTunians have downloaded it, and they have shared with me it's a nightmare.
Yeah, and there's a version that's... I know the downloaded one. That one's worse even than one I'm talking about. The one I'm talking about, it's weird that you put some things in there, and then it gives you the results, and then it gives you the option to override things. It's not on the front end. So when you first go to it, you're thinking, oh, this isn't what I'm looking for because it won't let me put in my stuff. What you do is you have to go with the default assumptions first, let it give you a number, and then there's a little link that it isn't even obvious. You have to kind of read it, and there's a little link there, and it says, if you'd like to override any of this stuff, click on it, and then it opens another window, and you can change all the stuff. So it's a little hard to get
to. And you can
to.
Get this from Social Security's website?
And it's from the Social Security website. It's again, not super user friendly. It's valiant effort on their part, but
well, it can't be that valiant. We pay for software,
yeah,
and it's just phenomenal. I mean, what we can do everything he's asking.
Oh, for sure.
With our software.
Yes.
So he may want to go to the website helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, and for $40, you get to enter your situation into it. And I don't know.
It does?
Yeah.
Our website does that?
Not our website. What did I say? Go to
you
what?
You said help with my social security.
Oh, no. It's, you can go to helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, but you ain't going to get any help with this question.
The calculator is at maximizemysocialsecurity.com.
Yeah. Thank you for picking up on that. I was testing you. You passed.
Well, I thought maybe something had been added to our website. I wasn't familiar
with. You're like, wow, really? For $40? Cool. Yeah. No. Go to maximizemysocialsecurity.com, and for $40, you can run your own calculator. There's no one there to answer your questions or anything. And I don't know if you get the ability on that $40 version to enter individual earnings years in or not.
I'm 95% sure you can.
Perfect. So there's your answer, listener. $40, maximizemysocialsecurity.com, mm-hmm. and you can play around with it to your heart's content. And I think for that $40, you get 1 year to play around with it.
It's something like that. Yeah. It's not bad.
You have to renew it every year. Mm-hmm. But for the first year, you can play around with it to your heart's content and see all this.
Right, and you can then set up the assumptions how you want and enter your specific earnings record so you're not just using Social Security's guesstimate of what you're going to earn. So it's a lot more precise.
Correct. So as I read his email, and I know you were picking up on a lot of things too, I just want to give him and our listeners a little idea of some of the things that were running through my mind, and I'm sure Chris's mind, as he was explaining everything that they have. And one of the first things that jumped into my mind is they're pension rich, asset poor. She has $190,000. He has $155,000. He didn't get into explaining if they have any other liquid assets. It's not a problem. It's not a bad place to be, rather, pension rich, asset poor, because between his pension and his Social Security, he's going to be pulling in about $120,000. Not quite as much as I think the two of them are earning as combined income based on the sizes of their pensions, but I could be totally wrong on that, absolutely totally wrong. But based on the size of their Social Security and pensions, I thought they might have been earning more than that. But without seeing how Minnesota actually calculates their pension, I can't be certain. But some of the issues that I want him to remember or think of, and you picked up on the first one, poor COLA adjustment. So even though in his he'll be in his late 50s, his wife will be in her mid-50s when they retire, even though they're retiring at a good early age, the value of that pension in 20 years is not going to be anything compared to...
And they, retiring in their 50s, have a much longer... 40 years. One of them probably is going to live to 90.
Years. Absolutely. Right? Could easily live 40 or more years. So you have a situation where that $84,000 in 20 years when they're only in their 70s might be worth half as much depending on what inflation is growing at. And there's some people who believe inflation is going to be hyperactive going forward. And if that happened, they could start running into some problems.
Yeah, a lot of people who are looking at these COLA caps that they're putting on pensions now to try to rein in things financially so that they become more sound, on more sound footing actuarially, like we've seen here in Colorado with the PARA system. One of the things they've done is over the past several years is reduced the maximum cost of living adjustment. And people weren't really up in arms over it because the limit wasn't a whole lot below what inflation really has been running and what the Federal Reserve's target for inflation is. So people were, oh, it's okay, I understand, it's not as great as it was before, but it's not that concerning. If for some reason inflation went to 4%, 5%, 6%, 7%, people are going to be up in arms about the fact that their pension is only going up by 1-1.5% when actual expenses went up by 7% or more for a retiree, because we all know that a lot of the expenses for a retiree already go up at higher than average inflation rates, things like medical expenses in particular, energy costs, those types of things, which are high on as a percentage of the total for a retiree. So that could be one of these things, one of those stories that we see in the next 10, 15 years that people with these pensions they thought were great, a little of the shine has been taken off of them because of these limits.
Well, you have to watch that. So your other assets and Social Security, listener, are what's going to help you keep pace with your cost of living increases that your pension is not going to help you cover. And that tells me I'm going to want to try to get you to delay your Social Security as long as possible. But he never indicated, Chris, if him and his wife are going to be able to live comfortably on the $84,000 they intend to get. Yeah. He did say, and I guess I shouldn't have glossed over that, he wrote here, my plan was to use my wife's 403B, current value $190,000, as a bridge for 6 years and file for Social Security at the same time when we reach 64 and when I reach 64, my wife reaches 62. So if he is in fact doing this, it's telling me the $84,000 is not enough for him and his wife to live on. So it's telling me that they're both earning more, which is what I thought, more than $84,000. He's going to burn through nearly half of his reserve assets, the $190,000 from the 403B. They're also going to be under the age, well, with his wife be under the age of 55 when she retires? I wish he gave me ages ahead of time. She will be 62. Well,
she's 2 years younger, so she'll be 56 when he's 58.
Okay, so they'll be exempt from the 10% early withdrawal penalty, right, or they'd have to do a 72T schedule. So they're not going to have to worry about all that crap, good, because 72T is a pain in the hiney. But they'll exempt themselves from the 10% early withdrawal penalty, but they'll still have to pay income taxes on it. But the point is, by time they reach 64 for him, 62 for her, the 190 is gone. He's using that as a bridge. Now he's going to turn on his Social Security, and all things will start to look good again. The $84,000, which would have grown a little bit because of his COLA adjustments, but not much, is all of a sudden going to be hit with a lot more secure income through Social Security. But again, it's not so much where you are today, it's where you're going to be tomorrow. Every decision you make with retirement planning, listener, and all listeners paying attention, needs to be made with two eyes. And a set of eyes on the younger you. So in his case, it's going to be the 58-year-old him and the 56-year-old wife, and also the 64-year-old him and the 62-year-old wife, because they're talking about retiring at 58 and 56 and burning through her 403B until they're 64 and 62, and then turn on Social Security. But he has to look at what that decision is going to cost the 74-year-old him and the 84-year-old him and maybe the 94-year-old him or her. The chances of one of them living to their 90s is quite good, unless they both have low life expectancies, which he did not share here. My fear as I looked through this is that everything looks good now. How is it going to look in 20, 30 years? Nobody looks that far ahead, Chris. That's what a good retirement plan is, listener.
Well, plus, it's far more likely that we talk about one of them making it. It's far more likely that you're going to become disabled or need long-term care than it is that you're going
to
die.
That's
so they have very little cushion, especially if they blow through half of their liquidity by using the 190 as a bridge. They're not going to be left with much if unexpected expenses come up. That, you know, sounds like, well, people are saying, well, $120,000, that's more than enough. They can cover everything. Well, yeah, until you have $100,000 worth of medical
But don't
expenses.
Forget, even though Social Security has a cost of living adjustment, it's been pretty lame because Social Security bases theirs, and we went over this in the past, on CPI. CPI, I always get confused. Is it the W or is it the urban? So CPIW is the one that they use. The reality is, though, he mentioned his minimum dignity floor is going to be more than covered. And I agree, listener, in year one, it's probably going to be very covered. your minimum dignity floor. It's your desired expenses that you're going to really be driving you spending down your 403B and your 457 at the beginning stages of retirement. But by time you get into your 70s, 20 years into your early retirement, by time you get into your mid to late 70s, it's not going to be your desired expenses, the fun things in life that I think are going to be impacting you. It's going to be your minimum dignity floor and what we call the crossover point, the point where your secure income, pension and Social Security, has not increased sufficiently enough in cost of living adjustments to keep pace with your cost of living adjustment, listener, not what the federal government is telling you through the CPIW is the cost of living. CPIW, 6% of it is healthcare expenses. In retirement, for retirees, Chris, especially as you get into your 70s and 80s, healthcare can start comprising 8, 10, 12, 15% or more of your expenses. And we're not even talking needing a long-term care issue. Mm-hmm. What if you were like my Uncle Benny, who for 6 years has had Alzheimer's? What if you suffer a stroke like a good friend of my mother's did and has been in a nursing home for several years? The stroke didn't make her pass away, but it paralyzed her. What if something like that happens? Well, what that's going to leave is you don't have a lot of assets, so the surviving spouse is going to have to pay for a lot of it through the pensions. And you have to understand how your pension income is calculated for Medicaid purposes, because it's Medicaid that will take care of you, not Medicare, if you are indigent. And everybody looks at the asset test for Medicaid, and they're not going to have much in that. He may have more money that he hasn't told us about in this email. I don't know. But if a lot of times we see people who are pension rich, Chris, they're asset poor. Mm-hmm. So if I have to believe the 190 and the 155 is all he has, then there's some issues here that need to be explored. And it might direct and cause them to want to delay Social Security even longer. But the difficulty in that is going to be then they may have to consume even more of his assets. So something that looks very easy and simple is all of a sudden getting me saying a lot of questions. And then they're not factoring in, or maybe they are factoring in, what I have termed the widow-widower tax penalty. He indicated the $84,000 is joint and survivor. That's good and that's bad at the same time, because it's a double-edged sword. It's more good than bad. But what happens, folks, at the death of the first spouse? Well, welcome to my world at the death of the first spouse. I'm a single man. Chris jokes around with that on the show. I joke around with it a lot. I wouldn't be single if I could get names right, as I shared with everyone a couple weeks ago. But Lord knows I screwed that one up.
It's a long story. Yeah.
Listen to the show from a couple weeks ago. You know how I screwed my latest relationship up. But for me, I pay more in taxes, Chris, than you and Jessica. No, Jessica's the woman I couldn't get a name. Don't tell me your wife's name. She is Melissa.
Yes.
Melissa. Okay. Yeah. See, how come I could get Jessica now? I couldn't get it when it was important 2 weeks ago.
It's a specific kind of wiring in your brain.
Whatever. But you and Melissa pay less in taxes than I do because you're married, and the brackets, especially under the new Republican tax cuts, are double what they are for a single person up until the two highest brackets, when they're more favorable for single people at that point, which I haven't figured out the rationale behind that. The two highest brackets favor single people. Every lower bracket below the two highest favor married people. But there's got to be a rational reason behind that I can't quite figure
out.
Or an irrational reason why they do that. But what we're getting at is, as a married couple, you've got much more wiggle room in those brackets before you are paying higher taxes. Not me. My brackets as a single man are half your brackets as a married couple. At the death of the first spouse, welcome to my world. Beginning the following year, your brackets are going to be compressed. They're going to be compressed down to a single tax filer. But your $84,000 of pension income is continuing unabated. but it's going to be being squeezed through much more compressed brackets. So the survivor is going to suffer a double whammy. The smaller of the two Social Securities goes away, about $1,500 he estimated. That is going to go away irrespective of who dies first, the husband or the wife. The husband has the larger benefit. If the wife dies first, he keeps his larger benefit. If he dies first, she keeps his larger benefit. The smaller benefit goes away. So the surviving spouse, Chris, gets a cut in Social Security, but the pension is joint and survivor. That continues the same size, but it's being squeezed through a smaller sausage maker, so more is being taken out in taxes. That's the widower tax penalty. You're going to be paying more in taxes and receiving less in income. Mm-hmm. Less Social Security, but your taxes are higher because the joint and survivor pension is being squeezed through the compressed brackets. Now, there's not much you can do for that. A lot of times, it is being driven by required minimum distributions. They're not going to have money required minimum distributions for two reasons. They don't have substantial qualified assets or assets in a retirement-style account. They have 190 in a 403B, 155 in a 457, much of that is going to be burned through during their early years of retirement by their own admission. So their RMDs are going to be smaller. We usually control the widower tax penalty by getting money out of these qualified accounts into Roth-style accounts between retirement and age 70. Well, there's no way to turn, Chris, a taxable pension into a tax-free pension. There's no Roth conversion strategies for a pension. So there's not much they can do. But I want to make sure they're factoring in a widow-widower situation, they're going to have less secure income being paid more in taxes and might have no or very little assets remaining to help support that spouse. And then to add insult to injury, the surviving spouse is going to be hit with Irma, not Hurricane Irma. But the income-related monthly adjusted amount. We're starting to talk more about this. I'm starting to put Irma under the widow-widower tax penalty. Irma's a much better acronym than whippeta. But widow-widower tax penalty is WWTP.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
I got to come up with a better acronym that flows than whippeta. But the widow-widower tax penalty is where I'm putting Irma. What is Irma, folks? Irma is the means testing of Medicare premiums. As long as you're married and earning less than $170,000 today, and these numbers are supposed to go up for inflation, the inflation adjustment was built into the original law when Obama signed it and then promptly postponed until 2019 and then recently postponed until, what was it, 2026 or 2028?
Something like that.
I think it's 2028.
More and, more people in there.
And why they're postponing increasing these numbers for inflation, listeners, as Chris just said, is to capture more and more people. Capture them doing what? Two things. Paying more in Medicare premiums. And I'll give you another thing that's going to happen. So what happens when you're subject to Irma? Married couple earning more than $170,000 is subject to the income-related monthly adjustment amounts. In other words, between $170,000 and like $400,000 of income, your Medicare premiums rise a lot. And I admit the first break point at $170,000 is quite large, Chris. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of married people are going into it. But that's today. Mark my words, they are never going to increase these for inflation, ever. They keep pushing it out, and now it's been pushed out to 2026 or 2028. And by the time that rolls around, they'll quietly push those out again. They're trying to get more and more people. So now, listener, let's just say one of you passes away in your mid to late 70s, and now all this is happening. The issue is Irma affects people at $85,000 when you're single. What did I say happens at the death of the first spouse? Welcome to my life. The $84,000 pension by his own admission, Chris, continues. And with even the modest or minimal cost of living increases he gets, it'll be at $85,000. So what happens? Well, the surviving spouse is going to be hit with higher Medicare premiums. But the first tier, Chris, is not that big. It's like another $10, $20 a month. It's not anything outrageous. The big thing they're going to be hit with, Chris, is they're no longer going to be held harmless under Social Security rules. That is what people aren't factoring in. I'll let Chris explain. You know hold harmless.
I do.
Why don't you explain? Because what happens, folks, under hold harmless, a retiree Social Security check will not decrease due to an increase in Medicare premiums. So you will never suffer a negative amortizing Social Security check unless you are not held harmless. And you are not held harmless in two main ways. There's a few others, but the two main ways is you are receiving Medicare but paying for it separately. You're being billed for Medicare. They're not taking it out of your Social Security check. Or you're subject to IRMA.
Right. In both of those cases, you have no protection. For those people who are claiming Social Security and paying their Medicare premiums out of the Social Security check, which is how most people do it, that's kind of the normal way, they essentially have a protection called hold harmless in there so that when Medicare goes up but Social Security doesn't go up enough, they limit the Medicare premium increase for you to either the increase they need or the amount your Social Security is going up.
Whatever smaller,
that's going to be the increase in your premiums. That is until the Social Security goes up enough in the future to catch up, if it does. You know, it's possible you could go long periods of time without that. But as soon as you crack the door and go into that IRMA world,
you are not held harmless.
You're not held harmless.
So what can happen is, let's just say you are now a widower, a widower listener. I already explained to you. Your taxes are going through the roof because you're in a compressed tax bracket. The survivor also has lost the living spouses or the first decedent spouse's Social Security. The smaller the two Social Securities go away, the pension is being reduced by significantly increased taxes. And then the surviving spouse has the privilege of paying a surcharge that's currently rather benign, $20, $30 more per month surcharge in Medicare premiums. However, they are no longer held harmless, meaning, let's say Medicare premiums 1 year increase $100 a month, but Social Security increases only $20. Under hold harmless, your Social Security check will not drop. You won't get the Social Security increase of $20. They'll take it and give it to Medicare, but the other $80 will not cause your Social Security check to drop. But if you are subject to IRMA, you can kiss that $80 goodbye.
Yep.
And your Social Security check is dropping. So now you have a negative amortization happening, and your Social Security checks are dropping. Your taxes are increasing because of the compression of the tax brackets, and the smaller of the two Social Security goes away, and the widow or the widower is sitting there thinking, this sucks.
All around.
Welcome, folks, to the widower tax penalty. If you are not factoring this into your retirement plan, or if you're working with a quote-unquote retirement planner and they're not talking to you about all this, they're clueless on retirement planning. They're probably an investment advisor, not a financial planner, and they're not specializing in retirement planning. I'm not trying to give a plug to our firm, but this is what we do. We do this every single day. This is everything that started running through my mind, Chris, when I read this email.
Stuff.
So now if people don't know what the hell's going through Jim's mind, this is what's going through my mind. So I firmly believe with what you said, Chris, I think this man could benefit from a retirement analysis.
Which a lot of people who are
that me
pension rich, asset poor,
it's me.
They have a lot of pensions. They're thinking, oh, my situation is so basic, I'm just going to continue to receive a paycheck.
Well, it's not as basic as you think.
Because when you're in your 30s, 40s, and 50s, your life hasn't entered the world of things like Medicare and IRMA and cost of living adjustments and on and on and on and on and Social Security claiming and survivorship issues
and
all
long-term care.
Stuff.
That was another thing that jumped into your mind. It's jumping into mine. He didn't say if they have any long-term care protections. Mm-hmm. He's not going to have a lot in assets, I think. I don't know his whole story.
But the good news is he's still in his 50s.
It's time to address all this.
It's not too late to address long-term care.
Plenty of time to address all this.
By the way, I have a new acronym maybe. Instead of How about STP, survivor tax penalty? You keep saying widower
tax penalty.
First of all, it's a little hard to say, especially as fast as you try to say it.
Widower. I can say that pretty damn fast.
I know, because you've said a lot, but STP, survivor tax penalty, it's the same
thing.
That's
too close to STD.
Okay. Or the oil.
Because someday I'm going to be across from someone and say, you have STP. And they're going to be, excuse me? Yeah. What'd you say to my wife?
Okay, I guess.
I'll tell you a funny story about I was recommending a couple buy a TIP fund, you know, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, and I'll tell you someday what actually came out of my mouth, and it didn't go over too well. Actually, the wife laughed.
Oh, you're not going to share it with our audience. You're only going to share it with me?
You could kind of guess what I said instead of a TIP fund. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't have been an advisor more than 3 or 4 years. I was just fresh out of school. And anyways, that's what happens when you're in your mid-30s. Okay. I don't think of those things anymore in my 50s.
Oh, I get it. You really?
I'm beyond that. Been there, done that. Move on. Okay, so what I'm trying to get this listener to understand is there's a lot of moving parts to your situation. And I just kind of felt like explaining that. For two things, I really think he can benefit from a plan, and I really think he needs to be thinking of a lot of these things. It's not, as you said, wow, let's retire early. And I'm not saying he can't, but let's retire early. Let's do this. Life is great. We got a great pension. You do. But retirement planning, folks, the reason we believe so vehemently in planning is we have to evaluate a decision today. And how is it going to benefit you? To what is it going to cost? Or how is it going to benefit? Because it's either a cost or a benefit to the older you. And that's why I say retirement planning, Chris, is a seesaw ride. And if you remember back to a seesaw in a playground, one side goes up, the other side goes down. Next side goes up, that side goes down. And then smart kids eventually got bored with that and said, hey, let's instead of going up and down, let's try to balance it across this beam.
Or
and
I used it as a catapult, put a big rock on one yeah, end and tried to launch things until I had to visit the principal.
So you could catapult. But the other thing, nonviolent kids would try to get it to balance. And that's what retirement planning is, folks. The 58 and 56-year-old couple is going to be on one side for this person we're trying to talk to. And the 76 and 78-year-old or the 86 and 86-year-old couple is on the other side. Or widower is on the other side. And they have to look and say, okay, if we do this now, wow, we're going to be great, but ooh. This is what it's going to cost us in the future. Well, if we sacrifice and try to help the future us, ooh, this is what it's going to mean for the current us. And then the idea is to get it to balance. Each of you have to give something up. The younger you has to give up a little, and the older you has to give up a little. The hard thing is, I don't know if the older you is going to be there. And I don't know if it's going to be both older yous or one older you. I know if it's one older you, the widower tax penalty, or the STD. It's,
see, you did it.
STP. See, you already got me going on that.
Oh, don't use it anymore.
Forget I said it. You already put it in my head.
Forget I said it.
Now, where was I going with that? The widower tax, whatever, wherever I was trying to go with that. But now you got me all confused with STDs and STPs and
balancing.
I was on a roll, man. I was on a roll.
I felt it. It was emotional.
But anyways, that's what a sound retirement plan will help you factor. But if you are not paying attention to the widower tax penalty as a married couple going into retirement, you're truly doing yourselves a disservice. You have to look at what that's going to be. And Chris, that drives tremendously what we do during the tax planning window, tax planning void, tax planning hole. I call it tax hole.
All agreed to say window now.
Oh, you
last
won out?
Week. Yes.
I wasn't here last week.
And Justin even said, no, we've all decided window's the best.
All right. Tax planning window, even though I thought tax hole.
Because it opens
good.
And you can go through it.
And it closes slowly.
And it closes.
Fast or slow.
You can see it before it opens. It's more like a window. It's not a door. It's a window.
It's a nice euphemism. I get it. Metaphor. I like it. Okay. So your tax planning window, we have to look not only to what your taxes are going to be as a couple, but what are your taxes going to be as a widow or a widower? And when people with large RMDs, that's where the widow-widower tax penalty really nails you. With people with large RMDs, Chris, they're shocked when they see what the taxes that the widow or the widower are going to be paying. And then it's even magnified more if the person, if one of the spouses married someone significantly younger than them. Because now you're being faced with a situation where that spouse could live a very long time being subject to this penalty. So look at a lot of that and make sure the advisor you're working with is factoring a lot of that in. Okay, what time is it?
Hour and 15 minutes, and the people downstairs apparently have questions for you.
What people? What are you talking about? I don't have any clients today.
You have other people, though.
Workers are trying to... Yeah. How do you know they're trying to get a hold of me?
Because that one of them texted me.
So oh,
they
for
were
Pete's
hoping
sakes.
To go over some stuff with you between
They didn't text
shows.
Me.
They knew you'd be on some kind of rant. So we only got to three, didn't we? Is that
no,
only three?
No, I got to two. I wanted to get
no,
to five.
No, we did two, Social Security and...
Oh.
And that, so we've got three.
Oh, well, hell,
so
that's
not
pretty
too
darn
bad.
Good.
Yeah.
Whiz. Well, apparently I had six emails then because we still have three remaining.
There's no way that's ever going to happen. So do you have a short one?
He says, I have a simple question, which is a terrible way to begin an email to me.
Oh, this is engaging radio here.
Actually, this question is very similar to someone I'm working with right now. I'd probably want to save it because his is a fascinating case with some of the things that we're uncovering.
Fascinating. That's a good word.
There ain't nothing here I can answer in 5-10 minutes. No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
Well, we should probably celebrate Independence Day week and...
Cut out early?
Cut out. Well, it's not really early. This is about how long it should take.
People
lose interest after an hour and 15
True.
Minutes.
Well, folks, hopefully you found some of this interesting. That's one of the reasons we are coming out, as I said, hopefully in August, if Chris likes my strategy, of the Retirement and IRA Show EDU for education, where we will not answer email questions, but we will instead delve deeply. Like, could you imagine a whole show on the widow-widower tax penalty? That would be fascinating
well,
for
we'd
me.
Well, we'd probably be able to investigate enough to come up with a better acronym.
We could come up with that. So be on the lookout for that coming hopefully to iTunes and Android platforms near you sometime in August. Until then, please remember, folks, we are live practicing financial planners. We specialize in retirement. Our firm is retirement planning centric and financial planning centric. It is not investment centric. We know a lot of you are do-it-yourselfers managing your own money. That's fine. You don't need to move assets to us. But if you want a second opinion, if you want us to try to project these numbers, if you want to see if the widow-widower tax penalty is going to be an issue, or if IRMA is going to be an issue, or if you should claim Social Security, or should you delay it, or how do you handle your pension, or all the other issues we talked about, simply reach out to us. The best way is to go to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. You can click on a schedule coffee and a second opinion. There's like a little calendar picture there. Click that. And we call it a coffee and a second opinion phone call. We'll talk to each other over the phone, try to see if there's a way my firm may be able to help you. If I can, I'll explain how and at what price. If I can't help you, I'll explain why and hopefully point you in the direction of someone who can help you.
Great. So thanks, everybody, for joining us on this week's podcast, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new one.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-5000. 1-800-522-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.